Session number 10931.
Mr. Benz, Reel 5, you're saying the French sent a Spitfire over?
Yes, the French sent the Spitfire over, and it machine gunned all up the main street of Battambang. And we dashed out and spread our Union Jack out on the ground outside the bungalow. But it made no difference. The plane circled round and came back for a second run. This, of course, infuriated the Major Nesbitt, and he summoned the head of the French mission, Capitaine Deschamps, to the bungalow, and gave him a good dressing down over this incident. But, of course, the French weren't too pleased either, because they were in the line of fire also. So our mission came to an end in Battambang, and after a short spell in Bangkok, we were then told we would return to Singapore, and we would return to the army, because of course by that time SOE had been disbanded. And I believe that the special forces in Siam were the last remaining remnant of SOE. So we returned by train to Singapore, and as we were travelling that way, we had to escort some Japanese war criminals who were being taken to Singapore to be put on trial. So we set off on the train. These Japanese, as good as gold, gave no trouble. They sat there very quietly. And I suppose we got a bit slack. And when we got, strangely enough, to the Singora Hajai area, two of these Japs jumped out the window. And Dan Adams just managed to grab the feet of one of them as he went out of the window, but he couldn't hold on. And they dropped by the railway line. It was dark. So we stopped the train and got the train to reverse back along the line, and we searched for them, thinking they must be injured. But it was hopeless, the jungle coming right to the edge of the railway line, and we could find no sign of them whatsoever. And it did occur to me that it was rather strange that they happened to jump out just there, where we knew there were still Japs hiding out in the jungle. But I don't think they could possibly have known that. So we continued on to Singapore, and there was a little difficulty over losing war criminals, but we got over that all right. And I was sent to, I think it was called Danoon camp, and I think it was, can't remember the unit, some signals unit in Singapore. I'd only been there a few days when I had these violent stomach pains again. I didn't want to report sick because I was due to be demobbed, and I was just waiting for the boat to come and bring me home. So I thought, oh, I have constipation again, I suppose, and I got some Andrews and dosed myself up. It got worse and worse, and I let it go on too long until I was absolutely helpless. And my friend Jerry Eason, who was with me at the time, called in the MO. MO said, oh, you have an acute appendicitis, off to hospital. So I went to hospital in a large army truck. In absolute agony, every little bump the truck went over was excruciating pain. I got to the hospital, walked in completely doubled up. But they were absolutely marvellous. They saw me coming, put me in a wheelchair, took me up to the ward, and the surgeon came running along the ward to examine me and said, oh, means an operation. Okay. I said, well, anything to get rid of this pain. So I was taken straight to the operating theatre. And it was the appendix had burst, peritonitis, and which was a very serious thing in those days. Well, still is, of course. And I was out for about a fortnight, I think. I came round, found drip on and tubes all over the place. And I was aware of people moving around me, that was about all. And I gradually improved. I think I'd been in the hospital about 6 weeks. And I could see people with the same complaint dying around me. And 5 minutes later, you'd hear the funeral procession draw up outside, and made one wonder sometimes whether that would be me tomorrow. But I gradually improved, and my friend Jerry Eason was always get a bit emotional over this. Yeah, Jerry Eason was absolutely marvellous. He visited me every day, which was not easy because he was in a camp right the other side of Singapore Island, and it was very, very difficult to transport himself across the island. But he was a great friend. And eventually I heard there was a troop ship, a hospital ship coming in. And of course, by this time, I was well overdue for demobilization. So when the surgeon came round, I said, I hear there's a hospital ship coming in. Is there any chance of getting on it? And he said, oh, no, no, we're not out of the wood yet. I couldn't think of it. So I just had to put it out of my mind and forget about it. And then the day before the ship was due to sail, he came rushing in the ward with a pile of papers and said, take a chance on it. You sign all this to say it's your decision, and I'll let you go. So of course, I gladly signed everything. And the next morning, I was taken down on stretcher to the docks, put on the hospital ship Oxfordshire, and we sailed. We went up to Rangoon, picked up more patients at Rangoon. From Rangoon we went across to Madras, and by the time we got to Madras I could just get up on deck. There was just one flight of steps up to the deck, and I could just manage that. From Madras we went to Trincomalee, picking up more patients. From Trincomalee, we went to Aden. From Aden to Port Sudan, next to Port Said, then to Malta and Gibraltar, picking up patients at every stop. And finally, to Southampton, where I walked off the boat carrying my kit.
Could I just go back to Cambodia? You were saying about the anti-French feeling there that you noticed. Mm. What did you notice which told you that the people in the area felt that way towards the French?
Well, of course, we were interrogating. The major was interrogating people there, and It was very obvious, the feeling towards the French everywhere. It was most apparent. They hated the French. They didn't want the French back there at all.
What was their complaint against the French, did you understand?
Well, I think the French had a poor reputation in colonial countries, as far as I understand. I think they were less liberal towards the people than the British, for instance. That's the feeling I always had. But it was very noticeable, the hatred they had towards them. And of course, subsequent events showed it, didn't it, quite clearly.
Would they show a hatred towards the individual French people you had with you?
Well, it's difficult to say, but I suppose being French was enough. I remember we used to, for instance, we met the French mission most evenings in what we called the Battambang Bar, and it was hardly a bar, it was just a roof suspended on poles, and we met the French there most evenings, and it was quite interesting really, because the French would bring all their bottles of brandy with them, but we would be trying to find out what they knew about events going on in the area, and they'd be doing the same, trying to find out what we knew. And this Lieutenant Healy, he could speak a little English, the odd word of English, and I had my schoolboy French, so he came to an arrangement whereby he would speak to me in English, and I would speak to him in French. So if you imagine the tangle we got into, it wasn't very successful. But whilst we were in the Battambang Bar, one couldn't help noticing all the nasty looks from the local people at the tables around us, and they would occasionally make remarks, which of course we couldn't understand, but we could see it was not complimentary remarks towards the French. And then of course the French mission received threats of murder, the same as the Reverend Ellison, and indeed we did as well. So it's difficult to describe really. It was such a confused situation going on there. We didn't really understand. They were fighting, but who was fighting whom? It was a bit difficult to say because there weren't French troops there. But I think there were different conflicting nationalist forces. I remember there were some called themselves Annamites. And I've never heard of them since. And then the Khmer Rouge and the Viet Minh and all these different people were around, and the outlaw bands. The Reverend Ellison, his daughter would tell me a story about him. He went out into the country to meet some of his Christians, and he was captured by an outlaw band who called themselves Israqs, and they frisked him to see if he had any weapons, and of course he could speak Cambodian fluently, and they said, oh no, you haven't any weapons, and he said, well, you're wrong, I have, and he felt in his pocket, and he always carried a small penknife. So he brought the penknife out and he said, you see, I have a knife. And so that quite amused them. They thought that was very amusing and it relieved the tenseness of the situation. And they took him to their leader. And the leader said, oh no, not this type of foreigner, meaning that they didn't want a clerical man, not this type of foreigner. And so he was released. So I suppose had he been a Frenchman, the outcome would have been different.
Was the object of the British mission in Battambang to help the French re-establish their control?
No, it wasn't. No, it was purely, I suppose you could say, we were there as referees or umpires to determine who was responsible for for each instant. You see, there was firing. The French were on the side of one side of the river, and the Siamese were on the other side of the river. And very often there was firing across the river, and somebody obviously ultimately got shot. And so we had to try and determine who started it, which was very difficult, of course. And as I said before, we had to go and view the bodies. And I remember on one occasion, this sticks in my mind, I don't know why, because it wasn't the worst thing by any means, but a Cambodian had been shot, and we had to go and see him. He was in a hospital, it was some distance away. We found this hospital, they called it a hospital, but I call it a cow shed. It was just like a cow shed with stalls and straw for the patients to lie on. And there was this poor young Cambodian lying on the straw there, and he'd had his thumb shot off. So the major was interrogating him, and then an orderly came along with the evidence, this revolting looking thumb on a white enamel plate. Why it sticks in my mind, I don't know, because it wasn't a horrific incident, but it's the one that sticks in my mind. And so, of course, it was almost impossible to determine who shot him or how it happened. It was all very, very difficult, really.
So the Siamese and the French were shelling each other?
Oh, yes. I would say shelling. They were firing across the river at each other.
With small arms.
Oh, yes.